Support comes from Empower Missouri's Affordable Housing Coalition, working to address the causes of housing insecurity and homelessness through tenant advocacy. Information at empowermissouri.org/housing.
Darlene Green is one of St. Louis's longest-serving elected officials. She's won every single one of her 8 elections to comptroller by wide margins, often facing no opposition. But as she seeks her 8th full term in office, she's facing 2 challengers who say 30 years is more than enough. Green joins me next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking to talk about why voters should continue to trust her with the city's finances. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need to credit, most days I don't, but most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me today in studio is
Comptroller Darlene Green, and I'm happy to be here.
Welcome to Politically Speaking for the first time. And you're here because you are seeking your 8th full term in office as comptroller, and you will celebrate 30 years in that office in 2025. What drove you to want to seek another term in that office?
I'm glad you asked that question. 30 years is a good round number to reach in any job, and I can't reach that without being reelected. So that is something that would be an achievement to be reelected, but more important than that, I see who's running against me, and even more important than that, I know that the city still needs me, and I am not done yet as comptroller. We've got a lot of money when we think about the RAMS dollars, when we think about the ARPA dollars that are yet to be spent, and we've got some nice round balances in our reserve accounts. The people of St. Louis deserve to have a competent, experienced comptroller looking after their money, looking after their tax dollars like I've done all these years in office. So that is the primary reason, is to continue to protect taxpayers' dollars. There is not one person running against me with any political experience. You know, having been elected, that's Abdana. She has been elected, but she has zero experience of running an office, whether it's statewide office, whether it's citywide office. She has been an alderman, but that is totally not the same. That's a legislative position. She has no background in accounting or in any finances. She did have, I understand, a committee appointment to a budget committee, and which is far, far removed from having any experience or qualifications for that matter.
And your other opponent does have an accounting background, if I understand it correctly.
Absolutely does have an accounting background, but no public official experience, no experience in running any kind of an accounting office of the size of the comptroller's office in the city of St. Louis.
What would you say has been your biggest accomplishment in that 30 years that you've spent in the comptroller's office, or almost 30 years?
I have turned that office around, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. When I entered the office, the credit rating for that office was triple B, and that's junk bond status. And now that credit rating is double A. And that means a lot to the citizens of St. Louis. That means our borrowing costs will be lower. That means that outside investors can look at St. Louis and say they may want to invest in coming to St. Louis. And that means that that's a well-run office in the city of St. Louis. The comptroller's office is a well-run office. We have strong financial management in the comptroller's office, strong budgeting in the comptroller's office. You just don't get an increase in a credit rating without having strong fiscal management in the office. And that's important. You know, people don't you know, really see what does that do for me. You know, I say you got the credit rating up there. What does it do for me, an average person, an average working person? Well, it means jobs. And what I mean by that is when we were faced with losing a mapping agency, which is now the Geospatial, that was 3,000 jobs. Otis Williams, who called me, once we were ready to almost ink the deal, and he says, Madam Comptroller, Mayor Slay wants to know, can we give the government the land? Our competition is across the river. Scott Air Force Base has said that they will give the land. And I says, Otis, yes, we can give the land to the U.S. government because we have good credit.
What's the connection there?
The connection is that we immediately went ahead and mortgaged 1520 Market, which we own, so that we can have the funding in order to give that land to the United States government, save 3,000 jobs in the city of St. Louis. Those jobs did not go across the river to Scott Air Force Base. They stayed in St. Louis.
If I'm hearing you correctly, because the city had the credit rating that it does, it makes financial sense to be able to mortgage 1520 Market to cover the cost of the land.
What makes the sense is that you keep your good credit so that you don't miss out on opportunities to grow. St. Louis is a city like any other city that wants to grow and expand, but you can't grow and expand when you have bad credit. You can't even do that in your own home. You want to be able to grow and expand. It's a common sense issue that a lot of people miss, especially if you're a politician.
What is a specific decision or policy that you have had in place over the last 30 years that enabled the city to have its credit rating boosted?
One of the first things we did was implemented a percentage of the reserve that we would maintain over the long haul. And that percentage we started out with was 5%. And that then changed over the years to a 10%. Now it's roughly 16% of our general fund budget. And that is so that we can let the credit rating agencies know that we're managing our revenues and our expenditures, balancing our budget in such a way that we can have a rainy day fund when we need it, and that we can have other kinds of small reserves when we need it in order to have our credit high.
Has the strong credit rating and some of the decisions you have to make to keep that strong credit rating come at the expense of other things? For example, keeping up that rainy day fund, you don't have as much flexibility to fill in holes in the budget when they might come up.
I have a great example for you. One of the things that I could avoid when I make the decision to protect the credit, one of them has to do with being sued. And I was asked during the downturn in the economy, as you can recall, the Blues needed to have some refurbishing of the Enterprise Center. And I said no, because at the time, our credit wasn't our books weren't looking as good, but our credit was good, but it wasn't looking as good because all across the country we had a downturn in our economics. And so we analyzed what it would do to add another debt that was not income producing. And you get, and it makes a difference when it's income producing. Yeah, let's do that. It's a balance. But this was for a facility that, we couldn't say that it was a good thing to add more debt. And so I said no. But as an accountant, I understand that a no puts me squarely within the confines of doing what is professionally sound as an accountant, as a CPA. I'm not a CPA, but any CPA will tell you. But if you are sued or if you have to make a decision, then you take the next best decision, which is by law, and then you issue the debt. So then there's a different look from the credit rating agencies as to why a debt was issued. It wasn't because there was a failure in the financial planning of that institution. It was because there was a vote that was made by a judge, or a decision made by a judge that, okay, legally this is something they had to do. And so you have to look at the reasoning behind issuing debt.
In addition to protecting the city's credit and being the CFO, the comptroller also does audits of city contracts and expenditures. And I'm wondering if there's been a finding when your office has done these reviews. What kind of follow-up are you doing to make sure that problems get corrected?
That's a good question as well. And we do audits, and we have some heavy-duty findings in contracts where some of the things that are written in the contracts aren't being followed through. For example, sometimes we're not receiving the revenues that's outlined in the contracts, and so we are able to report that to the vendor, and they're able to correct it by issuing the amounts of revenues that they have shorted the city, for example, and then we would go back to review. As a matter of fact, there's a review taking place now of the AT&T where we have found that there were some areas of which we were overcharged. Sometimes they change the rate when there are late fees and or late pays or whatever, and they automatically will overcharge you, even though in the contract those late pays and late fees are not supposed to happen in the city of St. Louis because we have such a large account and so many accounts, but because they do it for so many other customers, they do it by mistake for the city as well. And so they go back and correct it after an audit. And so we're having ongoing audit. It's been a long-term audit, I should say, where we are finding a lot of savings from AT&T from a continuous audit. So that is a very helpful thing for our city to continue to protect our revenue stream. And that's why we audit and review on a regular basis quite a few companies, quite a few contracts over time.
I know there's been a loss of institutional knowledge in your office due to retirements. How are you doing at building up that institutional knowledge and maybe fixing some of the disruptions that a loss of institutional knowledge can cause?
That's a good question as well. And you're right. I've been there probably longer than a lot of the people that are still left. Fortunately for me, I still have the budget director there. He's been there the whole time I've been there. As a matter of fact, I was his boss, and then I moved on down to the comptroller's office. So that gives me a great comfort level to know that I have a person there that still understands where we have come from. I'm building with the newer employees that kind of same knowledge in them, and it's perfect that I'm still there, that I can do that. And it's, I talked to, for example, one of our lawyers earlier this morning who has been with the city now for, I guess, about 3.5 years. And I says, okay, now that you're seasoned, now here's how I want to run this back to you that I have talked to you, you know, a few years ago. And they were very well versed because these are issues that people, if they're new, may have a different concept, may have a different perspective, but once they get, the institutional knowledge or seasoned or what have you, then they can get right with the program and be able to make a much better informed decision on behalf of the citizens of St. Louis that will be in favor of citizens as opposed to against.
There has been a lot of reporting by other outlets on delays in your office and things like signing contracts or filing documents, making payments to companies. How are you doing at fixing those problems that had been identified?
Those were computer glitches. And, you know, because we had Oracle that has been installed in our city, we were a paper-driven operation for a very, very long time, and then we went to a digital operation. Time was taken for training and all of this, but it took a long time, and during that time, there was a lot of glitches, and there were failures in the office in terms of late vendors being paid late and all of those things. But to have a AA credit rating means that my office is run well. We have a AA credit rating. We would not have the credit rating without paying our bills on time. Right now, I can tell you a bill can be paid within 2 days.
And how about getting those contracts signed so that those invoices can be paid? The step even earlier in the process where the comptroller's office touches every contract that comes through their
office. Absolutely.
And
those are signed very, very quickly once they get to our office. Now, the old thing is, or the old phrase is, it's in the comptroller's office. And 9 out of 10 times when somebody calls our office, the contract is not in our office yet. And we are asking the people on that phone, tell me what it is that you are or what is the service, what department were you working in. If they tell us whatever that department is, we'll say, hold on. And then we'll ask that department. And that department employee, we would help, we'd ask them, please send that contract or we will come up there and get it. And so that has been not just for the comptroller, Darlene Green, but comptrollers prior to that.
What's the average amount of time do you think it takes for your office right now to get a contract signed so a company can start working with the city?
I'm going to say the contract in our office right now, the way that the system is set up, that contract is not going to be in our office more than a week.
You have raised a lot of concerns about the way the city managed its North Side business grants.
Mm-hmm.
Was there more that the comptroller's office could have done on the front end to vet the program from the beginning? Was there any more touch points where your office could have been more involved?
Well, what my office does, as you had mentioned earlier, is to review or audit. And in this case, my office was not asked to be part of the second time around when the program was re-upped after the former president of the board left. I was involved in the planning at the beginning with the Mayor Jones and Reed. And once Reed left, Mayor Jones did not invite me back to be a party to the second writing of the legislation for the Northside project. So I was not able to be party to any of how it was set up or anything. Now, my staff, of course, had a small part in terms of some early meetings, but no decision makings that we were asked to make. And so, no, we could not have been any help because we weren't asked. And that's very important because when you're asked to play a role, then, of course, we would bring our whole professionalism to the table like we had to do when we gave the risk assessment. We brought our whole professionalism to the table to assess what we saw because we were hearing things and we knew that we were the recipients of those grants, and federal government gives a recipient certain responsibilities to assess the risk. And basically, we knew that these federal government says that those businesses that should have been funded with this money, they should be licensed. And we were learning that those businesses weren't licensed, and that is risking losing dollars in the future if you're going to avoid following the federal guidelines. So that was a problem. So what we did was we did our best to offer a tool to SLDC to get it right, to say that here's what we're seeing, here's what we're finding. And not only that, we verified those findings prior to giving that to SLDC. And what we were asking them to do is consider a level playing field because we knew that the playing field had been changed or the goalpost had been moved.
So there was no other point in the process except at the beginning stages of drafting the legislation and then as you went in and did the risk assessment to touch those contracts at all or to see the program?
I'll tell you why. When you look at the beginning stages of the second time, you found yourself at the end of 2022 when legislation was being processed to be passed. And by the time you got, and I said 22, but I mean 2023. And so that fall, and then when you came over to 2024, it took all the way to June 27th of 2024 before your announcement by Mayor Jones of the first round of those grants to go north. So you're talking June and then very soon after, prior to August, we start seeing reports. And I jumped in there. My first letter was sent September 11th to SLDC. So we jumped on it right away once we assessed the issue. And we haven't stopped yet because what we understood and what we thought we knew, we learned that we didn't know. And what I mean by that is we thought that the company was making all the decisions. And what we actually learned was that SLDC was making the decisions in terms of selection. But they did have a selection committee where they had said that the comptroller participated in selection, and they had to say no because they had to tell the truth. In other words, they had to, because that was a cover that was being used to use a selection committee. And so we did the right thing in the comptroller's office to alert SLDC that they needed to turn it around and do the right thing. And we have stood on that, and we stand on that today.
There is a lot of uncertainty in the city over the future of the earnings tax as it relates to the refunds from remote work during COVID. The city's had to pay out a lot more than it planned in refunds from earlier years. We don't know numbers from 2023 or 2024 yet. Where do you think the city messed up when it came to making the estimates of how much it wanted to set aside for the earnings tax refunds?
I wouldn't say we messed up. I think that what you're talking about is making an estimate, and we had a good guess. And we had a good guess based on the timing and what we were told and what we believed. And so based on that, I think the $26 million estimate was an estimate for that time, for that window of time. But fortunately for us, we have the reserves and we can pay that.
Right. But the $26 million was an underestimate of what you were going to need. Was there just you underestimated the popularity of the program, or what went wrong in getting to that $26 million number?
The estimate of the $26 million, as I was just explaining, when we closed our books June 30th, we had $42 million in a surplus, and the $26 million was in a reserve already sitting there. Now we're adding to that another $20 million. So in other words, we're covering, even though there was a
sure, and I understand that it's getting covered. We're not risking that. But my question is about getting at that $26 million number. How did the city underestimate so badly that was what they needed to set aside in reserves?
It had to be an estimate based on information that we had at the time.
And so the information you had was based on the number of people who usually apply for the earnings tax refund? Like, where did that $26 million come from?
Had to be an average, and that information would be more to the budget office in terms of making a final decision. So the information, the analysis that was gathered in terms of how many people that was expected, that was a very wide range. And somewhere in the middle, I would imagine, we came down and said, we will set up a reserve for this amount. And I do recall that there were talks about not every person would apply. And the estimation obviously was underestimated in terms of who would apply. So we had to do some rough estimates. Everybody does rough estimates. And I think we did a pretty good job with the $26 million. The failure could have been much more. Fortunately for us, we were right in the ballpark.
And had the reserves to cover it.
And I want to say that comes with not only experience of the comptroller, but also the budget director, to try to call it as we see it. And if we're going to be in the ballpark, we're going to be able to cover what we have called. And that's what we did. And I just wanted to say that because it's all about experience.
Overall, generally, is there something as the city's CFO that concerns you the most about its current financial picture?
Please give me that question again.
Overall, generally, what concerns you the most about the city's current financial picture?
Okay, I'm going to tell you this. What concerns me all the time is making sure that things are professionally run. And I say that, you know, because I'm grateful to be the one to be the comptroller at this time in this environment, this economic environment. I'm just so grateful. And I think about the times when there was not professionals in the job. I think about the time where we don't have professionals in some of the other jobs, because there are consequences for not having a professional in a particular job. So overall, that's my overall thought, because what that does for me is it says, Darlene, let's continue to launch the city forward. And how to do that is to continue to make those decisions that's going to protect the city financially. There are issues that I know that the city could have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in areas that we have avoided because of the professionalism that I show in that job when I'm asked to make those decisions. And that is right on point. And I thank God every time I'm asked the question and I go seek the legal advice, and that good right back and says, yes, you're on point. And then I keep moving forward. That's about being a professional in your job, understanding that sometimes you can have a ruse come at you, and then you're able to take that and turn it around with a professional decision that protects taxpayer dollars. So I say that wholeheartedly, and I hope you got the answer, because I know I was kind of not wanting to be specific about the issues, because that will call out some departments. It will call out some areas where they would know exactly what I'm talking about. But there are payments that could be made if you case in point, I'll give you a really good example. The building division right now is under a federal investigation. And so I immediately jumped into action once I understood that this was serious. And I took a look at the payments that we were making to those companies. I found that we were making not only payments with federal dollars, we were making payments with local dollars as well, which then I had to then report that to our local circuit attorney to let him understand that there might be, I wanted him to stand by, that there might be some work that he would have to do. Then he called on the police department to put his investigators on notice. And so I understood that that was my role. But not only that, I took a step further and said, let me see where we are with the status of paying invoices to them. I looked, we had just approved an invoice a couple of days prior to me sending that letter to the circuit attorney. I called upstairs. I said, we need to stop this payment. Do not let it go out. It was $387,000. So we stopped the payment. That's a professional inaction in the time of need. And so that's what I mean by being able to look at an overall situation. You know, what is it that I think about? I think about being a professional and in my job. And that's just really it. And I'm grateful that I'm able to do that and I'm able to be that, because I am. And I kind of think I'm good at what I do. And I have been. And I'm not like the fanciest speaker or anything like that, but I sure do know my job. And that's what's important to anybody that cares about their money. This, after all, is a job that's about taxpayers' dollars. And so that is what I think about. When you don't understand payouts, or when you don't understand what your job is, then you can be paying willy-nilly. There's a lot of ways that it can look like you did something proper. And then there's a lot of ways that it can look like you did it without being proper. So there are a lot of ways to do your job in a professional manner and protect taxpayer dollars. And I gave you a great example with the building division. That's an overall big picture, because those kinds of dollars are spayed out every single day, every single week. And if we're not professional enough to catch it when it happens, then our reserves will end up going out. But instead, we are protecting taxpayers' dollars because we maintain a well-run office.
So if you are reelected,
of the accountant.
So if you are, if you are reelected,
yes, ma'am.
There is nothing wrong with the city's overall financial picture. If you're reelected, the city's financial picture is fine. If there's a different person in office,
so you're
concerned about it.
So you're asking me a question that has to do with the time and point, because are you? Because
I'm just asking overall in general, as you're looking ahead to the next, you know, year, 2 years, 3 years, maybe through the end of this term, what concerns you most about the financial health of the city of St. Louis?
Okay, the thing that I'm talking about concerns me, but to that end, and I think here's where you go. It's about the working families. It's about the families. It's about the neighborhoods. It's about the public safety. And it's about the businesses. And I want the people who have chosen to live here to continue to choose to live here, because that's our tax base. So the financial health of this city is determined by the tax base. And I want to see that grow, because as it continues to dwindle, then our taxes will dwindle as well, and the financial picture of the city will become less and less. The other thing to that end as well has to do with the payout of incentives. Sometimes there's a little bit more that we can do north side, and some areas in spots of the city that we can do less in other areas of the city as well. That will protect our day-to-day, but to protect the tax base, we still have to have a strong financial management. That's huge because that attracts businesses, attracts people, it attracts the students that graduate and want to stay here.
There is a proposal floating around. I don't think it goes anywhere now, but I imagine it'll come back at the Board of Aldermen to create a city administrator position. What's your stance on something like that?
I read it. I disagree with it, and I'll tell you why. It says city administrator. It doesn't say city manager, and there's two different things. The city administrator, which is now proposed, says that this person will be hired and have two executives with them, and they shall select all of the directors instead of the mayor, and they will take the budget director. And therein lies a problem because that weakens the fiscal structure that's already in place by the charter. Moving that budget director that now reports to the Board of E&A, which is three people, that gives him cover. When he's making his financial decisions, he's got three different heads, and he has to report to because he looks at all city money. I used to be a budget director, so I'm very clear on what I'm saying. It's nice to have one boss, yes, but the financial structure of the city demands that you have three, a body of sorts. And that's not unusual in larger corporations. It's not unusual in other cities. You have it in L.A., you have it in New York, you have it in Baltimore and other cities. So I'm talking about what I know. And then you would have a weakened financial structure instead of the managers, the administrator.
So what's the distinction you're making here between administrator and manager? Is your concern that the charter change, you like the current financial structure, and that's your concern with
it? The concern is that the current structure is strong.
How do you think the mayor's race will impact the comptroller's race, either to your benefit or perhaps to your detriment?
And that's a really good question. I have to stand independent. I have always run independent in all of my races of the mayor because I know that I would have to work with whomever is elected as mayor, as well as the mayor would have to work with whoever is elected as comptroller. And that's real facts. And so I know that the people deserve to have the best choice, and they will choose. They will choose this April, in the end, who they want to run their city as mayor and who they want to run as CFO of the city. And that's just going to be final.
Politically Speaking is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Longtime comptroller Darlene Green, thank you for being on the podcast for your first time.
Thank you so much for asking me. I appreciate being here.